It's 1777, and the British are coming. Good afternoon, I'm Howard Coffin with Across the Fence. We're here in Orwell at Mount Independence. And in 1777, some 4,000 American soldiers here were waiting for the advance of a mighty British army. General John Burgoyne and 8,000 men were coming south. And the small American army here was concerned that they couldn't hold the narrows here between Independence and Fort Ticonderoga. In 1776, when the Americans built most of these fortifications, and in October they stopped a big British army that looked at the defenses and went back north. But this year was a different story. This view from the artillery position shows the narrows of Lake Champlain, and on the near side of the lake is the only road that leads to Mount Independence. On July 4th, 1777, Burgoyne disembarked infantry on both sides of the lake. They moved on the west side of the lake on Fort Ticonderoga. On the east side of the lake, they came down toward Mount Independence, and they managed to scale commanding Mount Defiance and put artillery up there. So the night of the 6th, American commander Arthur St. Clair decided, outnumbered 2-1, it was time to evacuate. Here in the State of Vermont Visitors Center at Mount Independence is this wonderful painting of the way things looked in 1777. There's Fort Ticonderoga and the Champlain Narrows connected by bridge to Mount Independence. This was known as the Gibraltar of America, and it was a powerful fortress, but it, of course, was undermanned. You look way up the lake, you can see Burgoyne's ships approaching, and if you look way down at the far end of the mount, we're in the area where we saw the artillery emplacement where the Americans were keeping watch. St. Clair sent his supplies, sick and wounded, along Lake Champlain to Skanesboro, or what we now call Whitehall, and then he marched his army along the Hubbardton Military Road. This is it today, the some 30 miles from Independence to Hubbardton. Approaching the north end of Lake Bomazeen, the Hubbardton Military Road turns sharply uphill into the high hills of Hubbardton. When the Americans reached here at Lacey's Camp, the only big clearing on the entire road, they stopped here briefly. The British came along a couple of hours later and camped for the night. In the British force were German mercenaries commanded by Baron Friedrich Riedesel. Remember the name. They will play an important role later in this day. Hubbardton was a clearing with perhaps a half a dozen houses where the Crown Point Road and the Hubbardton Military Roads met. One of the families who lived here was the Sellecks, and I'm standing on the foundation stones of their cabin. When the Americans arrived here late in the afternoon of July 6, they found the Sellecks hidden underneath their beds. An Indian raid had swept through here the day before, a British-inspired Indian raid, and the Sellecks were terrified. Here at Hubbardton was Seth Warner. And because he knew the territory so well here and was a veteran of many rearguard actions, he assumed command of the rear guard from Colonel Francis. Also here with Arthur St. Clair, briefly the commander of the overall American army. Before he took his main force and moved off toward Castletown, or Castleton today, he told Warner to follow him, but Warner did not. Warner decided to let his tired men sleep here at Hubbardton and move on the next morning. Hence, there would be a battle at Hubbardton. We've come down from the Selleck cabin to the valley of Sucker Brook, which runs along the base of that hill over there. They came down this hill, and the soldiers in this area heard gunfire as American sentries met the advance guard. Their commander of the advance guard, Robert Grant, a major, ordered them to form a line of battle. To get a better view, he climbed up on a stump, and just as he got up there, a marksman killed him with a shot through the head. But the British attacked. The Americans made a stand here briefly, but they were outnumbered and outmaneuvered, and they began a withdrawal to the high ground up toward the Selleck cabin. The Battle of Hubbardton at 7 o'clock in the morning had begun. On July 7th, 1977, the 200th anniversary of the battle, there was a reenactment held here. I remember early that morning, a bright sunny day, watching the British reenactors come down that hill on the old Hubbardton Road with drums beating and fifes screaming, and I could see the sunlight glinting off their bayonets. It must have been a scary sight to the Americans down here, those irregular troops. An old friend of mine, Jane Curtis, who used to do Across the Fences, told me once that this was the ghostliest battlefield she had ever seen, that part of Hubbardton here along Sucker Brook. From the brook, Colonel Francis had his Americans move to high ground, up to what we now call Monument Hill. They took position along this stone wall, which dates back to the battle. And here they fought the advance of the British for a while. But soon, being outflanked a bit, heavy pressure from the British regulars, they had to withdraw again. It probably was in this part of the fighting that a British officer remembered that an American soldier stepped from behind a tree and aimed at him from point-blank range, and the gun misfired. The Britisher fired back, and the American fell. The Britisher went over and looked down at the American and said, "I hope you are all right." The American was dead. The Americans hold only briefly on the crest of Monument Hill and then withdraw and form a line in the middle of this field. Now the two opposing battle lines are nearly a half a mile long. The Americans fight out there under the command of Seth Warner, Fraser leading the British. But the American line once again begins to crumble, and they withdraw back here to the Crown Point Road. The Americans once again are hard pressed. They're holding their line, but then they see an opportunity. The northern end of the British line, the British left flank, appears to be unprotected. The Americans attack from behind their fence, back out into the field, sweeping the northern end of the British line. It looks like they may win this battle, but suddenly they hear something surprising. Coming from over to the right there, they hear the sound of music. They hear fifes and drums, even oboes, and voices singing a Lutheran hymn in German, "Perhaps a Mighty Fortress Is Our God." The American flank attack has been flanked by the Germans, and the Battle of Hubbardton will be, very quickly, a British victory with the blow struck by Riedesel. The Americans now turn. They have only one place to go and retreat, over High Pitsford Ridge, because the British have blocked the Crown Point Road to Castleton. Late in the battle, a British shot killed Colonel Ebenezer Francis, apparently right on this spot. A monument was placed here in 1859. The British were admirers of the way Francis had led his men, and they gathered around to look at his body, and as they did so, from long range, an American marksman killed a British soldier. Hubbardton ended. The Americans escaped over the hill, most of them. The casualties were heavy. 25% of those engaged, more than 100 men were killed. But the Americans would live to fight another day. St. Clair's army was whole. They would fight again at Bennington, and then they would fight in the fall at Saratoga, where American independence would be won, and where the British commander at Hubbardton, Simon Fraser, would be killed. Here at Hubbardton, the state of Vermont maintains a fine visitor's center. After the battle, the British said they were amazed at the resistance that the Americans produced. They hadn't expected anything like it. It was a portent of things to come at Bennington, Saratoga, and beyond. I'm Howard Coppin for Across the Fence.